You sure it was 2026?
Yes, I am sure. John said that he got a call to examine some bones at a construction site near Pittsburgh.
There seems to be some activity behind that fence.
There he is.
Hey, Mark. Moose, how was the AI upheaval?
That was fascinating. You wouldn't believe what became of...
something here.
Oh, let's go check it out. I'll tell you about 2041 later.
All right. What did you find? That looks like a USB thumb drive. I'll bet it has the presentation on it.
What presentation?
Here, let me show you. See these bones? They were under an old office building that contained several large consulting firms. This was probably one of the younger, less experienced consultants.
Is that an appointment book?
Right, and a note. It says, "Don't worry about it. They are still buying a lot of our services. The more trouble they get into, the more they need us."
Consultant, all right.
And then we just found this. A bunch of papers near the appointment book. The cover says, "Data Strategy Executive Overview." Oh, this is probably a PowerPoint presentation.
I thought those were illegal.
They are now, after death by PowerPoint became more than just an expression.
Yeah, but the pages have been compressed together. It's probably a good thing. I'm afraid that if we try to separate them, the whole thing will just crumble.
Well, maybe it's on the thumb drive.
It's worth a try. My neural port only takes USB T.
That's okay. I have a converter dongle. It claims to be compatible with everything. I guess we'll find out. Okay. Put it in. Nope, not that way. Let's try the other way. Nope. I was right the first time. Oh, there it is.
Put it up on the holographic display. There's the file. Data Strategy Executive Overview. Oh, good. It's a PDF file.
And I have the 133rd anniversary edition of Acrobat Reader. Maybe we'll find some clues about what happened to this poor guy. It's open.
Wow. Page 1 of 60? How long were they planning on talking?
I doubt they made it to page 4. They were aching the whole time. Let's see. Project team introductions, yeah. CEO's on the list. Icebreaker activity. Two truths and a lie.
Oh, no.
That might explain some of the cranial distortions.
Beaten with a dry erase marker. After?
Or during. Or both.
Okay, flip forward. Wall of text. 15 bullet points. That is an impressive engineering achievement.
Whew.
All right, keep going. Bow tie architecture diagram. Awesome.
Oh. Here's a logical data model in two-point type. Wouldn't surprise me if we found it printed on a 2x3 poster buried nearby.
Yeah, you're probably right. Look at the notes. They were planning to do a stand-up exercise and walk through the model. $2 says there's a Dimbach wheel in here somewhere.
And we have a winner.
Yeah, I'm starting to think this guy winding up under the building wasn't an accident.
Maybe not. Let's get all this stuff tagged and cataloged. I'm inclined to put it in hazardous waste containment.
Good idea. Data governance has come so far, let's not contaminate it. Someone might think this was a good idea.
You guys go ahead. I will stay and supervise. You're not going to believe what happened in 2041.
This is John Ladley.
And Mark Cooper.
Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
We shouldn't be so hard on our junior consultant there. After all, it is a common mistake. Executive presentations with jargon and diagrams and data models and everything. You know, there's a lot of good work in there, and I'm sure they were proud to show it off.
Two truths and a lie?
Well, maybe not that.
But you're right. A lot of it is good work. But that's not what leadership needs to see. We need duckies and chickies.
And primary colors. Leadership does need some education, but focused on what they need to know, not what we want to tell them.
In the context of the decisions that they have to make, the risks they have to mitigate, and done in the language that they understand.
I think we have someone who can empathize. Our guest is Dr. Christy Kroot.
She is a professor at Grove City College in Pennsylvania. She also drives the postgraduate curriculum on data and analytics.
So in other words, she knows how to educate.
Not just educate, but educate executives, because she, before Grove City, she was also an executive in several Fortune 50 companies.
Later in the show, we'll swing by the Data Poetry Slam, and we'll get some advice from the 8-Bit Consultants.
And Mark has a very special dispatches segment. At the DGIQ EDW conference a couple of weeks ago, we met Sam Spencer of Aristotle Metadata in Australia. He caused a bit of a fuss down under with some unflattering observation about government investments in data and their results, or perhaps more accurately, the lack of results. Mark will set the stage today, and Sam will be a guest on an upcoming show. But first... thankfully, the most common theme currently heard around AI and data usage in general is people. Finally, organizations are accepting, not discovering. We have been telling them this for a long time, and I'm not letting them off the hook. Accepting that the behaviors around data are the same as TQM, Six Sigma, Lean, etc. And the biggest factor in rolling out those movements? Training. Education is key. There are not enough t-shirts, coffee mugs, or extra days of PTO to shift employee behaviors unless you do serious training. What is serious training? It means developing relevant, quality material. It means material that is specifically aimed at the audience and the desired outcomes. Beating people over the head with a 50-page PowerPoint deck in some kind of roadshow is not training. Well, wait, John, that can take time and be expensive. Well, maybe. Remember, an awful lot of what we need to train on has been around, and there is a lot of material to leverage. Also, leadership requires training, but it is not huge amounts. Leadership needs some fundamentals on leading data-driven organizations. They need to know data is an ecosystem, a supply chain, not a bunch of projects and files. Data mirrors strategy and culture. Management needs to know enough to understand challenges and get things done. How are issues resolved? What's a good policy? What are data principles? How do I know a vendor is selling vaporware? The people doing the hands-on work are mostly people already trained. But the training needs to be timely and focused on execution, not concepts. It really isn't about cost. It is about your will to change. Too many organizations hide behind the cost curtain. An essential artifact in any data-related effort, whether it's governance or business intelligence, analytics, AI, whatever, is the training plan and the training material. Invest in it and then execute it. The payoff is huge. And while you are at it, be nice to each other. It is my pleasure to welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed, Dr. Christy Kroot from a college she will talk about here in a moment. It's a place that's near and dear to my heart. And she is in charge of a lot of cool stuff that's related to our podcast. Welcome to Rock Bottom Data Feed, Dr. Kroot.
It's great to be here today. Thanks for having me. So as you both know, I work at Grove City College. I lead graduate programs there. We have several graduate programs, and I'm director of those. But prior to that, I came out of corporate America, where I worked as a chief information officer. And so this whole area is just really intriguing to me and a lot of fun and exciting to explore. So I'm glad to be here.
Oh, well, wonderful. Well, let's just get started. First of all, how did your institution determine what to offer? There's a lot we can do these days. Why does Grove City and other institutions that I know you've talked to, why do they offer what you're offering right now?
So I think that we look at the marketplace around us, And I'm near Pittsburgh. So we're north of Pittsburgh. We're south of Erie, Pennsylvania. And so you look at those marketplaces and you try to assess what employers are looking for in that marketplace. And then because you want to expand your reach a little bit, you try and look and see, is this a reasonable thing to offer in a more broad base? So for example, can you get to Canada and can get to other countries with content that is still relevant and desirable from their marketplaces as well? So those sort of serve the basis of here's what we want to offer.
So speaking of offerings, a couple of years ago, data science was the hot thing, right? Everyone was looking for data scientists. Colleges were starting data science programs and all. And academia is always a few years behind. So data science now is a little on the wane. And now the same thing is happening for AI. And so how would you advise a freshman that's coming in concerned about, seeing this happening all around them and concerned about having a marketable degree at the end of their 4 years in college?
Well, it's a really great question because I think education potentially hasn't really caught up with what is AI going to do for us and what is it going to do to us and what's it going to do for our students. But I think that, you want to advise your students to really get deep in these areas. A couple of things. You want them to be deep in their area, their content area, because that's really not going to go out of fashion. But you also want them to be sensitive to the current trends that are out there. So if you're in analytics, for example, you do have to be aware of the fact that AI is quite good at that. So now what is your skill set in that area? Is your skill set understanding business and making those critical connections that AI may not be able to readily make just yet? Is your skill set going to be in understanding the quality of the prompt that you enter, as well as being able to detect maybe what might be called AI hallucinations? Can you find those? And do you have the critical thinking skills? We used to call it reasonableness a long time ago. We'd say, well, you get this answer, is it a reasonable answer? And I think that's more fashionable than ever now. So AI comes back with an answer, and I think it's imperative for you to look and say, is that a reasonable answer based on the resources that it's citing? Is it citing valid resources? Can it tell me the percentage of its response that is potentially a hallucination versus based on real data? And so I think that you have to advise your students to develop those kind of skills. Analytics has not gone out of fashion. It's changed. The whole thing has moved to now, do you understand what you're seeing in this data? And so I think, look, Mark, I think it's a cooler field than it's ever been. And so I don't think students should back away from it. I think they should lean into it in an entirely different way.
And then so how do they get that? There's a certain amount of instinct that goes along with evaluating those answers, right? Reasonableness. You have to understand and recognize what's reasonable in order to evaluate reasonableness. You need to have experience to get hired to get the experience. So in the absence of, or with AI taking those positions or AI taking that role in the whole analytics process, how does a freshman or a new hire get that experience?
Well, so here's the th I think education has to change. So education for years now has used rubrics and learning objectives. So we have all of these learning objectives that we say we want students to achieve. We actually are talking now about curriculum development and how do we get AI learning objectives in our curriculum so that we start to teach those skills, because it is still a teachable thing. There's nothing really instinctual about figuring out reasonableness. It's based on, look, you can't get, if you're in analytics, you can't get away from, you got to know some basic math. You're not going to get away from that. Just because AI will do the heavy lifting for you doesn't mean you don't have to understand, look, I'm kind of expecting an answer that's between 92 and 98%. And when it gives me 3%, that's probably not reasonable. And so how do you help them to understand that? But I still think that is a learning objective that you have to purposely put in your course now and purposely teach, purposely assess. But I think, Mark, our learning objectives are going to be quite different
Oh, very
in the
much
next
so.
couple of years.
Very much so. I do a presentation for high school seniors and college freshmen called The Real Curriculum that talks about the things you should really be, I learned 8088 assembler. And of course, nobody uses that anymore. That's completely obsolete, but what you learn from that is precision. Or you can learn, depth of focus or creativity or, those types of things. And so in my classes, that's, I try to focus on those as much as language learning itself.
I think when this all sorts out, we're still going to have mechanics courses where you have to learn certain things. Mm-hmm. But I think synthesis courses is where you're going to see the big change.
Yep.
How do you synthesize this given the power and the productivity that an AI tool brings you? But I'm not so sure that you're still not going to have some just deep mechanics courses. Can you really get away from diagramming a sentence, understanding what a verb is? Understanding.
Oh, God, I hope so.
You hope? I don't know, John. I sort of think.
Biggest waste of time in my life, but that's just me. Sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah. We digressed. Go ahead.
I should have used a math example for you. If I'd have used a math example, you'd have said, well, okay.
Oh, but, well. It's 1967 and I'm ADHD and I'm sitting in a classroom that's 109 degrees and someone says, draw a line that says where the participle is. And I'm thinking, this has nothing to do with life. But I was a weird kid. Anyway.
No, but that's really, in some ways, a bigger challenge because teaching synthesis is hard. Learning synthesis is hard. And you need to actually have a class that's motivated to learn that material in that way.
Well, and I'm going to bring us back to our thread of talking here because I can take a Grove City College experience. And in full disclosure to the audience, that's where I got my undergraduate degree. My first professor in calculus just taught calculus. And it's the only class in my life I've ever failed. Now, is it still a 4-credit F? Because that was terrible for me. It just, what a boat anchor on your
Sorry,
GPA.
John, it is.
Yeah, what a boat anchor on your GPA. And anyway, got a 3.8 and a 4-credit F. All right. So anyway, so you have to go back and do it again, cause calculus. To the point of our conversation here, that's something that is a good skill to have, right? So I went and I took it from another professor, and his approach was entirely different. He taught it what you're going to learn is understand why it's important. And basically, his thing was if you're not going to be a math student, you just need to understand why this is important and how it works. And that's what they taught. And I think that's what we're talking about now is some of these other things. And that's one of my questions, which we're already answering here, is what else should we be learning? There's a lot of basic blocking and tackling that's not going to change either. Like you said, some of the objectives are going to change, but getting people to think critically and think differently that's never going to go away, is it? I mean,
I think that's not going to go away. I think learning how to work collaboratively with people that you may or may not agree with or like is critical. Integrity takes on a whole new meaning. I mean, some of the things that you should be learning in certainly your core courses are these soft skills. I don't see them going away. I don't see that, at least not in the foreseeable future. I mean, there's all this fuss about, well, someday robots will take over. I don't see that happening. I guess I'm just not in that camp. I'm sort of in the camp that, I think that they're going to do a lot of useful things for us. But I do think AI has the ability to bring back that curiosity to education, mm-hmm. and bring back some excitement. And the other thing that I see with AI that I think is so exciting is we've talked forever about lifelong learning. And now you're starting to see that be totally seamless. They go to high school, they go to college. And when you go to industry now, upskilling is a major initiative in all of these big industries. So I think that there's some real excitement that you can generate. And if you can get students to go back to being intellectually curious, that's going to be a huge win for academia. Because you're right, it's not just knowing the mechanics of calculus. It's really understanding that there's a lot of reasonableness that you can learn if you can understand what's going on in calculus. So how do you get kids excited about that? And I don't know that AI is not a huge player in that. Can I use AI for productivity and spend my time in a classroom getting you excited about the topic? I teach statistics. I teach statistics at undergraduate and graduate level. And I always think I win the minute I get students to go, yeah, but I wonder why. I just won. You now care about statistics.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you got to get them to that. You got to get them to where they're intellectually curious about, and you did that in calculus. You might have had to incur an F to get there, but eventually you got to, but wait a minute, this is kind of cool.
Well, that's my learning style. I'm taught by the beat over the head with a stick rubric is my only technique that worked with me many years ago. Anyway, Mark, you were on the verge of something absolutely pithy and wonderful, I'm sure.
Always pithy and wonderful. Carrying on from the lifetime learning, talking about the remote learning and especially graduate programs. When you're starting college, you can move to wherever it is that the college is and you're there in person. That's part of your college experience and part of developing the curiosity, I think, is well. Now, as you get into graduate programs, you have folks that are established in their careers, established in families, a little bit less able to move. That makes, of course, the online programs more important. But you lose some of that in-personness. And so how does Grove City address that in their graduate programs? And what are the program differentiators?
We're trying to morph on this. Okay, so right now we have a leadership summit where we bring in nationwide, sometimes worldwide leaders. And we have them come in and meet with these students and spend time with these students and lecture them. It's wildly popular and students like it. But I think that we need to do more of it. I'm going to back up. When I was at General Electric, we used to have these 505s. And 505 was Friday at 505, we're all meeting in the bar. So we get off at 5, we'll be at the bar at 505. And you can't really overestimate how much you get out of that. Because I learned things about you, Mark. You'll come in and go, you know, guys, I only got about 15 minutes because I got to be at a soccer game. And now I know you got kids that play soccer. Or I know that I just know things about you that I don't know without a 505. So I think what you have to do is get those kind of experiences, even in your online courses. How do you get that personal touch that says, I now know something about you that's quite important? And I think that's part of that. That's not going to show up in the learning objectives. That's going to turn up in when you have discussions about, okay, we want a fully asynchronous course that is high touch, and then defining what is high touch, what does that mean, and how do we achieve camaraderie, mentorship, all the things that come out of those graduate level cohorts, how do you make sure those stay vital and alive? And potentially, I don't know this yet, but potentially those getting together once a year really is an important event, but maybe it becomes a conference. So I think you do have to define those for every program, and every program is going to be a little different. So my education program will have different high touches than my MBA program, which will have different high touches than my kinesiology program. But I think those have to be really intentional. Otherwise, if you're fully asynchronous, it's easy to let those go by without paying attention to them.
And it's easy for those of us that are taking the course to just close down and, you know, plow through the course and then go downstairs and eat dinner or whatever. So what have you found to be successful for the data analytics online courses?
Yeah, I have. I mean, but again, it's got to be super intentional. I mean, we meet, it's not like I beat you over the head with it, but we meet every single year to talk about what are the continuous improvements that we want to see in our program.
So these are current students, it's current students and past students.
Well, mostly it's past students. Mostly we stick with past students on what was high value to you. What did you consider to be a high touch? What did you consider to be of high value? And we do that for a reason. We have documentation that says our past students have achieved incredible ROI out of these programs. So we know what percentage of them got promoted, what percentages of them took much higher paying jobs. We know these numbers. And so it's not to exclude our current students, but it's to say, look, we know this worked with this group of 95% of our students. So let's bring them back and say, exactly what was that? What was that that worked?
And so what elements of the curriculum have made the biggest practical difference for your graduates?
I'm not proud of this, and this makes me sad to say it, but they say the number one thing they got out of our program is each other. And they always preface that with, no offense, Christy, but...
Anything that starts no offense, but can't be good.
Yeah, it's always bad. But again, if you go back to what I said, my morning class that I just got out of, these guys are from all different large industries, and they're from all kind of global environments. And I think it's fair for them to say what I got most out of the program was my peers, which gets us full circle back to, in an asynchronous learning environment, you cannot ignore that, or you ignored it at the peril of your students.
Yeah, just being an academic, you know, and you're taking stuff in and spewing stuff out at a later time, it does not form you as a student. I think it's a good compliment that people say that their network improved by being part of your organization. That it certainly is something you can promote, you know, and even though it might not seem that they didn't come running to hear Professor Crute wax eloquently on statistics or analytics, you know, we can get over that. You know, we can get over that, because at the end of the day, look, there's some teachers I remember their names, and there's some teachers I don't remember their names, right? But I always remember the places where and the circumstances where, you know, the light bulb turned on and I had a good time in the class. And I think that's the best, you know, all three of us are or have been teachers at graduate and post-grad level. I'm sorry, graduate and undergraduate level. So, and that's a different thing. I want to go back to the what else needs to be offered. You mentioned the fact that soft skills, and one thing that we are running into all the time, and especially with AI and getting organizations are starting to report. There's another revision of the MIT thing came out last week, and some additional research that, you know, failures are starting to pop up, and Fortune 50 companies or 500 companies are saying, oh, well, we're backing off for a while. And it rattled the stock market, right? So, but that's all coming down, though, again, to the, you behave badly with your data. You're putting that data into the LLM. You know, you ask how many widgets you should produce next year, and the LLM says chickens. All right. I mean, that's the data. We've got to go change the behaviors. Then they go, no, it's just not working. We're back to the soft skills of organization behavior, what we call change management or culture management. What's going on there in higher education or with your organization, or what do you see there?
Well, I mean, we spent a ton of time talking about culture management this morning. Here's something that I thought was interesting that came out of this. It's tangential to what you're asking me, so I'll get back to what you're asking in a second. But one of the things that came up is we said, well, we don't want to push AI too quickly in this one industry because it's full of older workers, and the older workers will not adopt this. And my pushback to that is, did you ask them?
Yeah.
A bias, or did you? Is this a bias based on you putting them into a people group, which is never okay? Or is this reality based on you went out and asked them?
Yeah.
And the answer, of course, is, well, no, we didn't ask them. We just thought they rolled. Well, guys, okay, here's a newsflash. That's not legal. Number one, it's not legal. But worse, it's not good for your company. to make up stories about entire people groups. You are not a people group. You are John. You are Mark. You're not a people group. You're an individual, and you might be extremely excited about these new developments and still
oh, heck yes.
to 65. They are not mutually exclusive events. And so that culture, here's my issue with the culture thing, John. Are we going out and asking employees, how's the culture? Here's what we want to do. Here's because change management, you know, you guys all know that the Peter Drucker line, right? That culture eats strategy for breakfast.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That hasn't changed. Peter's been gone for 2 years now, and that has not changed. Right. So it's really important to stay in touch with your team. I don't care where they're located. So to say, well, I have a remote team, that's not relevant. What's relevant is, do you manage that team by walking around whatever walking around looks like today? Do you know your team? Do you understand that, look, John doesn't intend to retire for another 10 years, and he's pretty doggone excited about these new trends?
I'm using the bejappers out of AI right now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it's shocking to me that we are now sometimes, and again, this is a lack of soft skills, and it's something we need to teach young leaders, that look, that there's this soft skill of getting
And I think in general we can improve the offerings there. I don't see a lot explicitly in the catalogs or the curriculums, because too many people that I work with don't know anything about how to do a good training program or good communications or manage resistance. And when they hear that there's a resistance management pamphlet from ProSci, they go, you mean people talk about that? I go, yeah, look, hey, it's the only time you're allowed to gossip in a company is when you say that middle manager over there is not going to climb on board this bus no matter what you say. All right. I mean, that's I don't see a lot of that. Anyway.
But I think there probably is. So I come out of corporate America. And I've been in corporate America. I've been a leader for years and years in corporate America. So I'm reasonably new to academia. But one of the things that I think is really shocking in academia is there's an assumption that you all know what a registrar is. There's an assumption that you all know what Western Civ is trying to teach you. There's an assumption that, okay, and I'm trying to, and this is why I say it's very, very important for people who have been successful in business to spend their last gig in education. Because you're the people that can say, look, are you guys aware that outside of academia, nobody knows what a registrar is? That's like not a word anywhere but here. Okay, and make that a more explicit understanding for people that, look, we're not making you take Civ Arts because we want you to look at the David and we want you to know about the Hope. There's soft skills that are embedded in this course, and here are the ones that you will explicitly learn in here. And are we making that explicit? So I think some of it's there, John. I think right now it's too implicit to be seen by the rest of the world.
Fair enough.
We use a lot of words that the rest of the world doesn't use. What's a provost in your company? There's no such thing. I mean,
it's probably the name of some software we didn't use anymore. We don't use anymore.
So when we say the ivory tower, and we kind of look at that as a derogatory term, maybe the ivory tower should look internally and say, maybe we are not using the right words anymore.
I have recently attempted to write a book in our industry with a higher education person who's multiple PhDs, and we worked on the book, and we've had to make some initially some incredible adjustments, because I would write a chapter and he would write a chapter, and we would look at each other's chapters and go, you don't know how to write. All right. And he would say, you're not, you know, expanding and you know, this robust, and, you know, and I said, and I can't figure out what the blank you want to say because of all the big 50-cent words. So, you know, we had this chasm. And I think at the end of it, we're gonna just give it to AI and let AI write it. Anyway,
it actually will probably perform that task well.
Yeah, I just wanted to insert real quick that you know, my dad is 83, And he's a college professor and still teaches and has courses. And I mean, he's been doing this since the early 70s. And he's all over the AI stuff.
Absolutely.
So it's, you know, just because you're old doesn't mean that you know, this old dog is definitely learning new tricks.
Well, you know, so I say this to my children. I say, when my kids start getting sort of all, well, Mom, we are doing, I say, guys, let's back that train up. Any ideas on which generation gifted you with the internet? Which one gifted you with cell phones? Yeah, don't
Bingo.
Go there.
Yeah.
It was my
Bingo.
Generation.
Bingo.
Yeah, precisely.
Bingo. Yes. Yeah. When that waitress leans over the table and says, now you can pay this bill without even going up front if you take your telephone and turn the camera on. You know, this is thing, and you can, and it's really, really cool. And I just look at her and I say, young lady, I wrote the code that probably does this, which is exactly. not true, but I did write, you know, I wrote assembler code.
But for sure, we're yeah. the generation that gifted them with these devices.
By the way, Mark, not that Absolutely. Useless 8088 stuff. I wrote real honest to God stuff that I built shoes. This country used to build shoes, and I built shoes with my assembler code.
Yeah.
So there.
Well, I got thinking about that question, and my great grandmother was born in the late 1800s, mm-hmm. and she died in 1969. So in her lifetime, her family had horses and buggies. There weren't cars. There weren't airplanes. Weren't anything. She died a couple of months after we landed on the moon.
Exactly.
And I was thinking that with, you know, with my dad, my mom as well. Actually, the both of them were in chemistry, and did their graduate work and used slide rules in a CRC handbook. And mm-hmm. in a lifetime going from that, introduction of calculators, introduction of computers, now introduction of AI, and sort of a intellectual parallel in there as well.
Oh, absolutely.
But we're the generation that has taken AI on this really remarkable, fabulous journey. And so for people to assume that, you know, these more skilled, older employees don't have interest, they're badly misassessing.
Our conversation with Christy Kroot concludes in the next episode of the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
A hearty Rock Bottom thank you to our good friends at Dataversity. Be sure to visit dataversity.net and use discount code ROCK15 to get 15% off your first purchase.
These are dispatches from Rock Bottom, dredging up practical information, advice, and food for thought. I'd like to introduce you to Sam Spencer, founder and CEO of Aristotle Metadata, and he's been doing a little dredging himself. In 2024, the Australian government's Central Data Library launched a catalog project for its more than 36,000 datasets. The initiative was well-intentioned to facilitate safe sharing of Australian government data for the public benefit, and to date, more than $200 million Australian dollars have been spent on data discovery. And what did the Australian government get for that investment? Not much. To read about the accomplishments in the annual reports, you would think that the initiative was a success, but do any of these accomplishments sound familiar? Senior executives established priorities, schemas were defined, infrastructure was deployed, and webinars were developed. The problem is that nobody ever looked closely at what was actually being produced. Most departments just did the minimum and then stopped, and some didn't even do the minimum. And by minimum, I mean 26 attributes, only 10 of which were mandatory, and it's not like these were super esoteric or obscure. And speaking of doing the minimum, the annual report bragged that 22 agencies contributed records from their data inventory, but 4 of those agencies contributed only one. Do you think that the Australian Taxation Office keeps all of their data in a single data set? I sure hope not. SAM has established a public goal to have 1,000 data sets with 100% mandatory metadata coverage by August of 2026 with no budget, no authority, and, as he describes it, no friends. He's making progress, though. Track it at the link in the episode description. We plan to have him on the show to hear the story directly from him and to learn how it turned out. That's what I think. We'd love to hear your stories if you're willing to share. Drop a comment or write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com.
Data Poetry Slam. Finance and sales had a need for good data. Consultants promised the ability to slice and dice. Patiently we waited, paid invoice after invoice eagerly. The new architecture was cutting edge, a data lake of enterprise proportion. But the design split IT, halved with a wedge, the requirements filled with distortion. From data quality to conversion, new hardware, software, middleware too. Less of a process and more excursion, release after release. Still, no value. Through stars and snowflakes, marts and cubes were built. Still less a warehouse, more a patchwork quilt. Data Poetry Slam. The 8-Bit Consultants. Advice in 256 characters or less. 4 times better than those 2-bit consultants. Today's question comes from a participant in a data products workshop Mark gave at the recent DGIQ EDW conference. They asked, how do you navigate requests for new data products that aren't in line with corporate strategic goals?
This is where you find out if you really have leadership support. The answer should be simple. You don't do them. And if they start development anyway, reassign their resources to prioritize requests so that you can finish faster and then maybe work on theirs.
The 8-Bit Consultants. If you have a question in 256 characters or less, leave a comment or write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered legal advice. Counterthreaded is not responsible for any losses, damages, or liabilities that may arise from the use of this podcast. The views expressed in this podcast may not be those of the hosts or the management. This podcast is not intended to replace professional medical advice. Any resemblance to actual events, entities, businesses, or persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Your mileage may vary. In this episode of the Rock Bottom Data Feed, Christy Crute shared her observations about how AI is reshaping education, not by replacing foundational skills, but by elevating critical thinking, curiosity, and judgment. Students still need deep domain understanding even as AI handles more of the mechanics because reasonableness may become one of the most important skills of all. We'll conclude our conversation with Dr. Crute in the next episode. And stay tuned later in this series when we hear from Sam Spencer about data governance in the Australian government. Be sure to visit dataversity.net and use discount code ROCK15 to get 15% off your first purchase. Until next time, this has been John Ladley and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening, and remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom. You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, The Fuss About Christy Crute, at our website, rockbottomdatafeed.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a Counterthreaded production, copyright 2026, all rights reserved.